Greetings. Welcome to the Edwin W. Lawrence Room here at the University of Vermont. 475 Main Street, we call it Hubert Hall. It's named after Robert Hubert, who coached debate here for 48 years. And that's a long time. I'm Alfred C. Snyder. I'm the Edwin W. Lawrence Professor of Forensics at the University of Vermont. Joining me today is Justin Parmesk, my coaching colleague.
Yeah.
And we're going to continue with our introductory series on how to debate, policy debate for beginners. And today we're going to talk about note-taking, which is absolutely important.
You have to answer what the other person says if you're not writing it down.
Right. Debate's all about clash. You have to answer what they said. And unless you're able to take notes, then you won't be able to answer them.
Yeah.
The other thing is that your notes are what you speak from. You need notes and an outline and ideas to speak from, and your notes that you will take in the debate will be not only your record of what the other team says, but what you will speak from when giving your arguments. It's really a difficult task for new people to learn.
It's one of the more difficult parts of the debate.
But it's absolutely essential for you to participate. If you don't have the notes, then it's hard for you to participate. We have a special word for the notes in debate. We have special words for all kinds of stuff in debate. And we call your notes your flow sheet or your flow. And the reason that we use the term flow is because your notes here, your flow sheet, allow you to follow the flow of arguments through the debate. And that's just what your judge is going to be doing. Your judge will be following the flow of the arguments. And unlike most debates here at the end of the 20th century, and probably at the beginning of the next millennium as well, that you know, things that we think are debates are not, because people's ideas don't clash. Check out the next presidential debate. You'll see that's not true. But in debate, you must clash, and your notes are essential for that. When you start out, your note-taking will not be very good, and it'll be frustrating.
It is a little bit frustrating, but you know, you just got to stick with it, and the more you do it, the easier it gets. If I could do it, anyone could do it.
Okay, there we go. So it's very important. You have to work on it consistently, keep working, and don't be afraid to keep trying to improve. Your flow sheeting will never turn around overnight, but it will improve every time you keep doing it. And the critical thing is really to not give up.
Yeah.
Keep doing it. And don't give up. Also, you can learn from others. You can, if other people are having a practice debate, you can go flow that practice debate.
Yeah.
So there's lots of ways that you can work on.
Yeah, you could flow in your classes, your teacher's lectures.
Mm-hmm. In fact, learning to do a flow sheet for debate will dramatically improve the note-taking in your classes. Did you find that to be true?
One of the best things as far as bringing debate into your schoolwork is that the teachers taking notes in lectures becomes significantly easier after you know how to flow a debate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, generally, when you're taking notes in class, you're trying to get down all the words that the teacher or the professor says. And that's not really what debate asks you to do. Debate asks you to understand what the other person says.
Right.
So you don't write down exactly what your opponents say. You try to write down what your opponents mean.
Right. It's more getting the arguments that they're saying instead of just each particular word that they're saying.
And this is why it will revolutionize your note-taking in your classes. Because instead of just writing down what your professor says, you'll be focusing on what your professor means. And every time you listen and take notes, you'll be preparing for to answer the midterm, the final, and everything else. Let's start about what to write with and what to write on. I think generally you want to get a pen that fits comfortably in your hand,
yeah.
Something that you can write easily with. It's important to get something that moves quickly across the page.
You don't want something you're going to be stumbling on or getting ink all over your hand.
Right, something that doesn't smear. Also something where the point will break down. This, for example, is a flare pen.
Bad.
The point breaks down, it's too broad. What kind of pen, how broad a tip pen you want, depends on how big you write.
Yeah, which you don't want to write too big when you're flowing, so medium to small point.
Medium to small point is good.
Yeah.
I always recommend black.
I agree 100%.
Because black stands out well, it stands out against white, it stands out against yellow, it's easy to see. Now, there is some disagreement in the debate community. Actually, there's a lot of disagreement about flowing in general, but there's one thing that there's some disagreement about. Some people like to flow all the affirmative arguments in one color and all the negative arguments in another color. Is that what you do?
That's not what I do. I know a lot of people who do that, but I find flowing in one color is easy enough for me. There are separate columns for each speech, so you separate your speeches that way. Separating them by color for me only ends up confusing me as to what color is affirmative and what is negative. Mm-hmm.
Also, you have to change pen.
Yeah, changing pen
so
in the middle is...
You lose time when you're writing. You lose content while you're changing pens. And sometimes when you write down your opponent's argument, you want to write down yours right next to it. And so that's, you know, you have to put the pen down in order to do that, or you break your color code.
Some great debaters swear by it.
Some great debaters swear by it, and like many things, what works for you is what you should do. Yeah. However, it is true that the vast majority of policy debate judges flow the same way. Yeah. And it's very important for you to flow the same way that your judge flows. You want to be following the round like your judge is following the round. And then maybe you two will see things the same way at the end of the debate, and you can get the decision. Then there's the question of what to write on. What to write on. Now, you're going to use a lot of paper taking notes in debate. So you need to think about this. A lot of people like to use the 8.5 by 14 yellow legal pads. They already have lines on them. They're already, they're nice and yellow, and they're fairly cheap. But another thing you can do is buy a ream of legal sized paper.
Yeah, just buy staples or...
Yeah, just go to any kind of you know, office supply store and get 500 pages of, you know, and it will be cheaper than legal pads. Other people even like bigger paper. They use that big 11 by 17 paper.
Yeah. It makes it maybe a little bit easier to organize if your handwriting is very big, but it's also a lot more expensive to use the bigger paper.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So... you need to figure out what's in. Get lots of it. Don't think you can go to a debate tournament with 4 or 5 sheets of paper. Oh, I have one sheet of paper for each debate. You'll need a lot of sheets of paper, mainly because each sheet becomes a sort of a playing piece in the game of debate, and it helps you organize and keep things separate. Well, Justin, why don't you talk to them about the basic setup of a debate flow sheet, and when we've got started here on the board.
Right here we set up a couple of flow sheets for you. This is what each one piece of paper would look like. And to make it a little bit three-dimensional to let you know that there should be a stack of papers usually. You're not just going to have one piece of paper. And the first thing that you'll notice is that it's broken up into 7 columns. And the reason for that is that each column is a different speech. Now, you may be asking yourself, well, there's 8 speeches in the round, but as you'll soon find out, the negative has what's called a negative block, and that's up here. They give the second negative constructive and the first negative rebuttal go back to back right after each other. So the idea with those 2 speeches is not to repeat what your partner says, so because of that, we just flow that in 1 column. That's why there are only 7 columns. And now, each one of these pages represents 1 argument. And when you're flowing, when the affirmative is flowing their speech, they break their speech up into what's called observations or contentions or advantages. And each time they have a new observation or a new contention or a new advantage, you want to flow that on a new piece of paper. And so they would say something like, contention 1. And you would write contention 1 on your flow. And then they might have an A sub point, which is something with a piece of evidence, and then a B sub point, and then a C. And that might be their argument right there, A, B, C. Then the first negative speaker is going to go, and when they are ready to answer the contention 1 that the affirmative laid out, they're going to then have their answers right next to the contention 1 flow. They might have 4 different answers against the argument that contention 1 was made in the 1AC. Now, if there's another argument in the debate, if the negative is then going to bring in maybe a disadvantage into the debate, then they would flow that onto another piece of paper. And that would be in the 1MC column because it's the first negative constructive. And they would have maybe a disadvantage which said A, blah, 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 B, and C, nuke war. Big impact. Okay? And so that's on another piece of paper. Now the affirmative gets up for their next speech, and they have to answer, they have to respond to the contention one, and then they have to answer the disadvantage. So they would have the two pieces of paper, and they'd have their contention one answers here, and then they'd have maybe five answers to the disadvantage. And those different answers get flown on different pieces of paper. And that's why we use different pieces of paper for each argument, so at the end of the debate, whatever's left in the last two columns is what was created through the flow of the argument on that specific argument. And that's why we have seven columns and different pieces of paper for each argument. Each column is a speech, and each piece of paper is an argument.
So, Justin, during the debate, how many pieces of paper are people likely to need during the debate?
I would say most likely you'll need between like 5 and 6 or 7 pieces, you know, up to maybe 10 or 11 pieces of paper for one debate. Depends on how many observations and advantages the affirmative has and how many off-case arguments, disadvantages or counterclaims or critiques or topicality violations, you know, that the negative has. I mean, you can use up to 15 pieces of paper for one debate.
Mm-hmm. So if the affirmative case had 3 different contentions, you would have three pieces of paper. One for contention one, one for contention two, one for contention three.
Yep.
And then at the end, then if the negative had off-case arguments or offensive arguments, let's say that they had a topicality argument and 2 disadvantages.
That would be 3 more pieces of paper, which would leave you with 6 for the whole debate.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's very critical to remember, have separate pages. Anything about how you should lay your pages out when you put them together? Well,
you always want to lay your pages in the order that the speech is going to be in. So if the first negative speech is going to have 3 off-case arguments and then contention 2 and contention 3, then people who are going to be flowing, everyone but the person speaking, is going to want to put 3 blank pieces of paper out and then contention 2 and then contention 3. And whoever's speaking usually will give what we call a roadmap to tell you where you're going to be going, what arguments you'll be talking about, in what order. And that is the order that you want to keep your flows in. So it's important not to keep them. If you use a flow pad, you want to separate the pages, take them off of the flow pad, so you can put them, shuffle them around in whichever order the speech is going to be in.
Because sometimes issues will drop out of the debate, right?
Yep.
Like sometimes the negative will have a disadvantage, and then they'll decide after the affirmative answers it not to carry it any farther forward. And so you can just set that page aside. And generally, good debates start out with a lot of issues, and then they narrow down to a couple of issues.
So usually just 2 pieces of paper.
Which is why it's good, too. And one of the other things about having separate pages is that you need to make sure in those speeches where you're supposed to deal with things that you deal with every page. You want to make sure that you have, if there are 3 pages for the affirmative case and 3 offensive negative arguments, which are off case, you better make sure you have 6 pages.
Yep.
And in the first affirmative rebuttal, you better make sure that you deal with all 6 pages. One of the things about debate is that you can run, but you can't hide from the other team's arguments. And if you don't answer a major argument that the other team has, how does the judge look at that?
Pretty much that means if you don't answer an argument, then you've done what is called conceding it. You've said, okay, their argument is true, and usually that will give the judge a lot of leeway to then vote for the other team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in some cases, you consider that if you don't answer an argument, you agree with it.
Right.
So then you're in deep trouble. One of the other things that I wanted to mention about the pages is sometimes we're tempted to cram everything together at the top. Don't be afraid to like spread things out. What should they do if some, let's say, a disadvantage is so big that it won't fit on one page?
Well, the first thing that I would say is don't be afraid to maybe use a second piece of paper. Some people go onto the back and blow some answers on the back, but I would suggest just taking a separate piece of paper and start the flow on that, so that way when you start to prepare for that, you don't have to be flipping backwards and forwards. You could just put them one on top of the other and have all the arguments going down as well.
One of the other things that I find useful, especially for new debaters, is to label the pages really big so you understand it. So like, if this is the disadvantage about nuclear war, you would put like really big, nuke. Right? And if this was the first contention, you might put it in really big number one. So it makes it easy for you to keep track of them as the debate goes on. Oh, where's my page about that nuclear war dissent? Oh, where's my page about topicality? Here it is. It's the one that says T-O-P in very big, in very big letters. And I think that's important because when most people speak, how many pieces of paper do you think they're used to using? Like one. Right, and all of a sudden you have people giving speeches with 8 or 10 and it gets very confusing.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid to label your pages really clearly and easily, because sometimes they get misplaced and misorganized
and organization is key, and because it's so important, these small things actually end up helping you in big ways.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, I don't like military metaphors, so maybe we'll use a target practice metaphor instead, that your ammunition for your target practice is your arguments, but just throwing bullets at the targets won't get much done. Your flow sheet, your notes, are how you can aim the ammunition at the target to make sure you hit it, so it's very finely pointed, it's directed right where you want it. And sometimes if you don't have any arguments and don't have much ammunition, well, you can take the butt of your rifle and smash the target into little pieces of it. Sometimes, and then I'll ask for your opinion on this, it's easy, you can win a debate even if your arguments aren't very good, if you're well organized.
Definitely, especially when you're first starting out, your arguments might not be the best arguments in the round, but if you're debating them better, and if you're more organized and you're clearer in your rounds, which come from being more organized, then you can take round even when your arguments are not as good.
Mm-hmm. It's much easier to win if you're organized with weak arguments than it is to win if you're disorganized with good arguments.
Exactly.
So definitely, organization is absolutely key. Let's talk about some specific symbolic vocabulary and things that people can use to try to, and we're going to send you over to work the camera now. As we talked about some ways to write down specific things that people say. Well, we already talked about how it's not really about writing down exactly what the other team says. It's really about writing down what the other team means and how they're dealing with the argument. So there's a basic symbolic vocabulary that can help you. Every time they say educational reform, you can't write educational reform. You have to use various symbols and various kinds of abbreviation that can help you do that more effectively. Let's talk about symbols then that you can use. And I'm going to give you some examples of some basic symbols that debaters use that they find to be incredibly useful. Remember, you're not just trying to write down what they said. You're trying to write down what they mean. So these symbols are basically ways in which you can establish the functional relationships between ideas. And I'll just give you some examples. Here's a very basic symbol that you can use. The equal sign. And it can stand for a lot of things in the debate. It can stand for the same as, it can mean is, and it can mean will be, so that the equal sign can help you with a lot of specifics. The other kind of symbol you can use is an arrow, which generally stands for causes or leads to, and a lot of debate arguments are about this causes that, this leads to that, and so you can establish some kind of, show that there's a causal relationship in the argument by looking at it, it's particularly simple. Another basic pair of symbols, arrow up means increasing, arrow down means decreasing. And of course, all of these can be made their opposite by simply drawing a line to them. Is not the same, does not lead to, is not increasing, is not decreasing. One of the other symbols that's probably most useful, and people have different symbols for this, but everybody has one. I use a whole X. That means somebody read a piece of evidence. Now, I think it's important to be able to differentiate between arguments that are proven by evidence and arguments that are simply asserted. The evidence-proven argument will always be stronger than simply the asserted argument. So it's important for you to know which arguments your opponents proved with evidence and which they didn't. So the X can help you a lot there. There are also a lot of symbols that you will develop through time, and I'll just share a few of them with you. I will generally draw a little misshapen circle to mean something was said here and I'm really not sure what it is. Don't be afraid to do that. It's very important for you to know what you don't understand so that you can find out, ask cross-contamination questions about it, ask your partner. Another symbol that's really useful to use is the question mark. And you can put that on your flow sheet to indicate that you'd like to ask a cross-examination question about this. Every time they say something that you can think of a cross-examination question for, you should be willing to just put that symbol there. Then when you stand up to cross-examine your opponents, you can look to the question marks on your flow, and that will help you a lot. There are some other symbols that people use. Once again, you can develop your own. The triangle is often used to indicate change, right? And we talk about change a lot in debate. So that's something that you could use. I have a couple of others. I have a circle with a line through it. To me, that generally means that you made an argument without a piece of evidence that you really needed a piece of evidence for. Somebody can't just assert, the new Chinese leaders have a completely different approach to human rights. Right? That's not something that your average college student or high school student is able to say authoritatively. In order to establish that argument, you need some kind of evidence. So this is a little symbol that tells me what to argue when I stand up to speak. Other symbols, greater than and less than, are also symbols that you can use. You can use symbols that stand for numbers, thousands, millions, billions, trillions. Numbers are getting bigger these days. And I'll let you know if we need any beyond trillions. So that will really help you. Why write out all those zeros and when you're writing 1 million when you can just write 1 M, for example? Some of the other abbreviations that we use are topic specific. Every topic has a lot of things that are specific. Educational reform, you can shorten to ER. Federal government can be FG. So every topic has a lot of, if you're arguing a case about school vouchers, V can stand for vouchers. If you are arguing about economic sanctions, SXN could stand as your abbreviation for sanctions. So every topic has a lot of opportunity for abbreviations. And there are also a lot of opportunities for debate abbreviations. You don't need to write out topicality every time. You can write T. You don't need to write critique. You can write K. You don't need to have to write disadvantage. You can write DA. CP for counterclaim. AP. What do you think that stands for, Justin? Time's up. Affirmative plan.
Oh, see, I use AFF.
You use AFF for affirmative plan. Well, everybody develops their own symbols, and that's fine, and their own abbreviations. People say, how do I make abbreviations for a new concept? My advice, leave out the vowels. For example, here's another quiz, Justin. HSPTL is an abbreviation for?
Hospital.
Hospital, right. And you just can leave out the vowels, and that will help you a lot. So, you need to think about your own techniques for improving things, and then you can actually write arguments like A piece leads to increased spending. Or you can say school uniforms do not cause increased academic achievement. And before you know it, you are understanding these ideas based on their meaning instead of just copying down words. You know, the verbal section of most standardized tests asks you to figure out the meaning of confusing vocabulary and confusing paragraphs. That's what it's all about. And every time you take a flow sheet and participate in debate, you're actually practicing for the SAT, for the LSAT, for the GRE, and that's how come many debaters do so well in their specific assignments. Well, there are some things that we should wrap up about and think about in terms of what we want you to remember out of this specific lesson. And I think that one of the most important ones is that your flow sheet is absolutely essential for you to be a successful debater. My first piece of advice is never give up. If you miss something, write down the next thing they say. Once you stop flowing, you're no longer a participant in the debate. You can ask your partner, you can ask them in cross-ex, but once you stop taking notes, it's over.
Yep. The next thing is to try and write down everything that you can. Keep going and just try and focus all your attention during that 8 minutes of the speech on trying to listen to what they're saying and write down as much of it as you can.
Don't be afraid to look at the flow sheets of other people. Look at the flow sheets that your coaches have, of your judges, other people on your team, your partner, and look at their flow sheets and see if you can learn from them and learn from their techniques, or maybe you have something to teach them because their flow sheet, your flow sheets are better than theirs.
And practice a lot. Watch debates, watch practice debates at your squad. Try and flow your teachers during their lectures. Watch outrounds if you can watch them. Watch your varsity debaters debate. Just practice flow anytime you can.
And you also think of simple flow drills.
Yeah.
You can do that. You can get several of you in a room. One person can speak and speak for only like a minute or a minute and a half. And then you can all compare your flow sheets and see how you're doing and get the evidence down. And then as time goes by, you can flow faster and faster delivery and get more and more stuff down. And before you know it, instead of just having the symbol X for a piece of evidence, you'll have the symbol X. You'll have WP for Washington Post. You'll have 599 for May of 1999. And then you'll have something like school uniforms do not lead to increased academic achievement. And when you do that, then you're really fully engaged in the debate.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to look at other people's flows and to learn from other people. One of the great things about debate is being able to teach each other and learn from each other. And once you learn these techniques, don't be afraid to teach them to your novice debaters. When you're no longer a novice, after simply a year or a semester of debating, you'll have so much to teach them, and flowing is one thing that you can teach that will help them a lot. Well, thanks, Justin.
Good luck.
Good luck. Keep on flowing. Don't give up. And keep on tuning in and practice flowing. Good luck with your first practice debate, and we'll see you with more in our basic debate instruction series.